let the good times keep on rolling. We're going to move on to draft advisory opinion 2024-14, which is the DSCC and Rosen for Nevada. We have the same counsel for the requesters here with us, and we have Mr. Campbell. I feel like we haven't seen you in a while, but I'm glad you're back. Please take your time to get settled, Mr. Campbell, but whenever you are settled, if you could introduce this matter for us.
Oh, perfect. Thank you very much. All right. Thank you, Chair Cooksey, and good morning, Commissioners. Agenda documents number 24-43. A, B, B1, C, and D contain five draft responses to an advisory opinion request by the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee and Rosen for Nevada, the principal campaign committee for U.S. Senator Jackie Rosen, who currently represents Nevada and is a candidate for re-election in the 2024 general election. Requesters ask whether they may evenly split the cost of hybrid television advertisements that clearly identify Senator Rosen and equally promote on a time-space basis both her candidacy for the U.S. Senate and generic candidates of the Democratic Party. Requesters further inquire about three proposed advertisements and whether certain audio and visual components of the advertisements serve as party or candidate advocacy. Each of the drafts conclude that the DSCC and Rosen for Nevada may evenly split the cost of hybrid television advertisements so long as the time and space devoted to Senator Rosen does not exceed the time and space in the advertisements devoted to the generically referenced candidates. Draft A further concludes that, regarding proposed advertisement A, portions of the hybrid advertisement that feature Senator Rosen speaking directly to the camera should be allocated as candidate advocacy, and those portions of the hybrid advertisements being narrated by Senator Rosen, paired with visuals that do not include Senator Rosen or her opponent, need not necessarily be allocated as candidate advocacy. Regarding proposed advertisement B, the phrase greedy politicians and the visual of pharmaceutical executives are not allocable as party advocacy. And regarding proposed advertisement C, the proposed audio and visual references to Donald J. Trump, a federal candidate for U.S. president, are not allocable as party advocacy. Draft B and revised draft B conclude that, regarding proposed advertisement A, the benefit reasonably expected to be derived is completely attributable to Senator Rosen and thus should be treated as candidate advocacy. Regarding proposed advertisement B, the phrase greedy politicians and the visual of pharmaceutical executives are not allocable as party advocacy. And regarding proposed advertisement C, the proposed audio and visual references to Donald J. Trump, a federal candidate for U.S. president, are not allocable as party advocacy. Draft C concludes that regarding proposed advertisement A, portions of the advertisement featuring Senator Rosen or narrated by Senator Rosen must be treated as candidate advocacy. Regarding proposed advertisement B, the phrase greedy politicians and the visual of pharmaceutical executives are allocable as party advocacy. And regarding proposed advertisement C, the proposed audio and visual references to Donald J. Trump, a federal candidate for U.S. president, are allocable as party advocacy. Finally, draft D concludes that, regarding proposed advertisement A, the benefit reasonably expected to be derived is completely attributable to Senator Rosen and thus should be treated as candidate advocacy. Regarding proposed advertisement B, the commission did not approve a response to this question by the required affirmative vote of four commissioners. And regarding proposed advertisement C, the commission did not approve a response to this question by the required affirmative vote of four commissioners. The commission received two comments on the request and four comments on the draft. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Campbell, for that presentation. Let me open it up for colleagues. I see Commissioner Dickerson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Same question. Do I have counsel's representation that these three ads will actually be run if approved?
I'm starting to get, if there's a question as to the ethics of me submit, like I'm getting upset by these questions. There's nothing in the statute that says that you actually have to go and do it. We have budgets. Like I don't understand it, or what is the intent of these questions, and not to get.
May I rephrase?
Yeah, I'm getting upset.
Well, let me rephrase. Do I have counsel's representation that as of the time of the filing, it was the intent of your client to run these ads, if the answer was yes to the proposed questions?
Yes.
And that remains true here at this hearing?
Yes.
Thank you.
Colleagues, Commissioner Lindeball?
I'm glad that counsel said something about that, because I completely agree. We are here as a body to, as I said before, say what the rules of the game are. And counsel has come to us with questions about whether or not they can do something perfectly legitimate. And I don't think we need to ask at every moment if they intend to do something. Things change on a hairpin notice. Maybe they decide not to play in a certain state. They can tomorrow, in an hour. That doesn't change the fact that this is an absolutely legitimate question to ask here.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, let me go to the vice chair first. No, yeah, go ahead. Unless you want to defer.
I was going to change the topic. So if my colleague wants to say something on the previous topic.
Sure. No, I appreciate that. It's not a question of ethics. It's a question of the scope of the KO statute. Like, I need to know that it's an actual action or a transaction and not a hypothetical or a test case. And you've now answered that question. Thank you.
The vice chair.
Thank you. I have a factual question. I think one of the reasons there was this flurry of different versions of responses that all kind of in many respects get to kind of the same place is that I think I at least am a little bit unclear on the facts. The scripts that you submitted, you know, advertisement A, advertisement B, advertisement C. Is that the whole script? I mean, obviously there would be a disclaimer at the end, but is it anticipated that this is a portion of an ad or that this is the whole ad?
The anticipation is that this is the whole ad, but it would include the standard disclaimer required, which would say paid for by the DSCC and Rosen for Nevada, authorized by Senator Jackie Rosen. I'm Jackie Rosen. I approve this message. Postage stamp. You can tell I clear a lot of ads at this point in the cycle.
Thank you. I'm sure we're all familiar with the disclaimer. So that's fine that you left out the disclaimer, but I think there might have been some confusion as to whether there was some other content. So I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, looking at advertisement A is what makes, you describe this as a hybrid ad. The candidate is either speaking or on screen for the entire advertisement. What is it about this that you think is hybrid? What's the part that's not a candidate ad?
Certainly. So before I answer this question, I do just want to say requesters don't have a copy of draft D. We weren't aware there's a draft D. So if we could get a copy, that would be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, we can ask staff to give it to you. I'll stipulate that it's, we'll get one to you right now. It's extremely close to draft C, but obviously with 3 and 4 not answered.
Okay,
that's so. I would argue, in my opinion, there's very little substantive difference with respect to questions 1 and 2 between C and D, and then what it sort of drops out 3 and 4. So
I appreciate. Like,
we'll get you. We have people. We'll get you a copy anyway.
Thank you.
So please go on.
Okay. So Commissioner Weintraub, I think the key part of this ad that does, I believe, contain party advocacy is in the audio, right? And it is spoken in the candidate's voice, which I do think is what raises the question of whether it can be scored as party advocacy, but it is referencing Democrats passed Medicare 60 years ago and are still protecting it today, giving our seniors a safety net if they get sick and need care, right? So that portion of the ad is clearly advocating, I believe, for generic candidates of the Democratic Party and their efforts to pass Medicare. But I will say, and this is the reason I posed the question to the commission, is because I read the plain content prong under 10921 to say if you clearly identify a candidate, right, you have to treat that as candidate advocacy. So the question I pose is whether in the hybrid ad context, the commission would apply 10921 or they would kind of fall back on the underlying messaging of the audio. And again, to the to why I'm asking this question, there's just not a lot of guidance around hybrid advertisements. Every day I review and clear like upwards of 10 of them. And it is very hard to do that as a practitioner without guidance. So I'm very genuinely here asking you to make my job easier, because it is very difficult to call balls and strikes based on a bunch of deadlocked MERS. So that's why the question, and I think the party advocacy portion comes in the conversation around Medicare.
Thank you. So if and as I said earlier, just gonna repeat it, I've got no problem with your asking these questions. I just want to make sure that when we answer them, we understand the facts clearly. So if the commission were to determine that anytime the candidate is either speaking or on camera, that has to be allocated as candidate advocacy, and the candidate has to pay for that, is this still a hybrid ad?
No, what I would do to answer your question very practically is have someone else speak that portion so that I could score it as party advocacy. Huh? Have a generic voiceover say that same part and then make it party.
All right. Well, that's not what I'm not going to answer that about advertisement A, because that was not the question posed.
Really, I'm just being very direct.
I get you. You're explaining why you framed it this way. That's really helpful. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Dickerson. I have a lot of sympathy on this one, actually. Most of my weekend was in the depths of the AOs that deadlocked. So you have my sympathy. Let me ask a big picture question, because I think I do think there's some tension in the way this was framed in the request and the way the comments came in. So let me bypass the tension and ask you the underlying question. What's the role of issue speech in all of this? Because it seems to me like one of the big issues in the background is that, we know going back to Buckley that, issue speech is politically valuable. It's not regulated because it's irrelevant. It's not regulated because of, vagueness and overbreath concerns. So it seems obvious to me, and I had thought to your client from the request that came in, that when you're discussing issues that are central to the parties, the overall national parties or the ticket within a state or, but outside of the context of a specific campaign, you're going to have certain themes that are just the party's message. And that very often those themes are not going to be express advocacy. They are going to be that line in Buckley about the practical, distinction collapsing and the distinction collapsing in practical application between, a question about abortion or a question about pharmaceutical pricing or a question about, inflation or a question about, gun rights, or choose your issue depending on your party. And everyone is going to understand that that clearly has value to the overall pitch that the party is making about how we would like to govern the United States of America. The problem I have with this, and again, I think the writing's on the wall. We're probably going to divide on your specific, ads on the B and C ads. But I think it's important to get your perspective on this, which is, why is it that you can allocate if you say vote for Democrats, but you can't allocate if you say vote for abortion rights? Like, that strikes me as like a very obvious problem of constitutional avoidance in our interpretation of our regulations. And I'm not clear on what your position is on that.
So it is a very good question, and a question I've been asking myself as I've been trying to lawyer these ads for the better part of a decade now. So I very much appreciate it. First, I will say Buckley, I understand Buckley. I don't think that Buckley guides us here, because once you are a political committee, you are subject to the act. And we're not in Buckley world, right? We're looking at the act here. And with the act, the act says, again, and I just feel like I could just play a record player of myself on this. The act says expenditures made in coordination with the candidate are a contribution. And the commission has grappled hard when looking at if an expenditure confers separate and equal benefit, or not even equal, but separate benefit to two parties that are jointly making it, can you get away from that general rule and say that each party is paying for the benefit reasonably expected to be conferred upon it, right? So the question we're looking at in hybrid advertisements at its core is, when does the party get separate and equal benefits such that it can pay for 50% of the advertisement, right? And I think the problem you have when you're only talking about issues and you're not tying that issue in any way to generic candidates at the party, is the only way to interpret that issue discussion is in the context of the clearly identified candidate, right? That's just a candidate ad. If you run an ad that says it's important to restrict abortion rights, vote for Alan Dickerson for United States Senate, how he's going to support, you know, the right to life, I don't know how the party gets a benefit from that ad other than promotion of its candidate, because the only way to understand the issue discussion is in light of the candidate. There's no other subject of the ad, right? But if you're running an ad that says Democrats will stand up for your reproductive rights, Jackie Lopez is a Democrat and she'll stand up for your reproductive rights, I see that the party is getting a separate benefit through the advocacy of Democratic candidates generally. But if you take that requirement out, all you have is a candidate ad, right? Discussion of issues is only going to be understood by the viewer in light of the candidate. And you have gotten rid of that separate and equal benefit that justifies deviation from the statutory language.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
But don't you run into an underbreath argument on that theory? Because, you know, if your theory is, I'm making this message, and roll with me here, and I think this is completely accurate, that people have, like, everyone's going to understand that certain messages are coded in ways that, you know, are being pitched by one party or the other. It's not much of a safe harbor than to then turn and say, vote for all Democrats, but also this Democrat, right? Like, if your worry is the double counting there, or the fact that sort of, you know, the benefit is entirely going to the person who's expressly advocated for, it's not obvious to me that 106.1 makes any sense on that theory. Because, again, you're only mentioning one candidate. Aren't they getting they're included on the list of candidates in the generic party reference. So you've got a double counting problem either way.
I'm not sure I'm totally following. So let me ask a follow-up so I make sure I understand your question. 106.1 says that if you mention more than one clearly identified candidate, you divide on a time-space basis, right? According, because that's how the reg says you figure out reasonable benefit to be derived. Here, you're only mentioning one clearly identified candidate. And in that context, advisory opinion 2006-11 says, well, the most salient feature is the only candidate you're mentioning. But assuming that at least 50% is party advocacy for generic candidates, yes, the party can pay it for up to 50%, but strictly limits it to only 50% for that reason, because that the candidate is the most salient feature. So I guess I'm not tracking the application of 106.1 to...
Mr. Chairman, I mean, the problem is that most salient feature is unconstitutionally vague, but we'll leave that aside, right? Like, the problem is we're building on stilts here.
I do not
disagree. I guess my question, let's use an specific example from the SAO, right? Like, so, and I could pull it up and quote your request, but I thought that your request was very forthright in saying you want to be able to mention Donald Trump because he is a focal point for policy disagreements between the parties as the head and one of the parties and his presidential nominee and all the rest of that. And so there are going to be obvious advantages to the Democratic Party as an entity from using the opposing party's most prominent member as a foil. I mean, do you still believe that? Because I'm, you know, because there's some tension between that request, but are you with me so far?
I'm certainly with you and I understand where you're going. And the reason that I struggle and my client struggles is because mentioning Donald Trump truly does have benefit to the DSCC. He has become, the same way that Vice President Harris has become, a standard bearer of the party, a reckoning force to motivate voters in and of themselves, right? But the struggle I have is, as we've been discussing, regulations have to be given effect. And 106.1 says that if you mention a clearly identified candidate, this is now what we call multi-candidate advertisement, and you divide according to time, space, basis the candidates mentioned. So I don't know how to get around that regulation despite a very correct, I think, both truthful in how my client interprets it, and I just think in how our political environment works, that mentioning Donald Trump is creates a benefit to the party. It does, but 106.1 tells me I have to allocate according to the two candidates mentioned, and he's a candidate.
So final point on this, and I suspect this will be a longer conversation over years, likely in court. But
how about over drinks instead?
Anytime, counsel. So the problem when they put a litigator up here. Here's the problem I have. My problem is that, yeah, I understand the sort of slippery slope, reductio ad absurdum of, you know, you're expressly advocating for a second candidate. That's 100.6.1. We allocate between the expressly advocated four candidates. And then we've got sort of this concept of, well, what if you're advocating for all the candidates, right? The generic sort of reference. And then you get to something like, I don't know, Trump Republicans or MAGA Republicans, which I'm certain your clients are running ads saying some version of that phrase here or there, right? Is that now, you know, an unambiguous candidate reference that can no longer be treated as a party thing, even though it's talking about a bunch of, like, on its own terms, it's talking about a bunch of candidates, to eventually reaching, like, just pure issue speech that, you know, has some advantage to one party or another. And I think where I am uncomfortable, and like the draft reflects this, is that I don't think you can, you're inverting the Buckley paradigm by saying only express advocacy is the safe harbor. And the farther you go down that continuum towards pure issue speech, the harder it is to allocate. And that just strikes me as very obviously wrong as a matter of first principles of how we read our statute. And again, this conversation we had over drinks, but I think that that's the problem here. And that's why I'm inclined to say, yes, you can run that last ad and allocate it as proposed, because there is clearly an independent value to the party. And 100.6.1 is correct in saying if there's a benefit, you can allocate on the basis of benefit.
What I would say in response is I'm not advocating for an express advocacy safe harbor. I don't think that you have to expressly advocate for generic candidates to score something as party. And I think to reground this analysis, what we have is a general statutory rule that expenditures in support of a candidate are contributions. And the question is, when is there an exception to that? And I think that, again, you have to have a reasonable separate benefit to the party to create that exception. It has to be present. And with respect to mentioning Trump, I think it is contradictory for this body to say in the last AL we just did that we have to give effect to 102.17 despite the statute. We got to give it effect, but then to turn around here and say we don't have to give effect to, now I'm going to forget the exact citation because it's been a long morning, but 106.2, we can ignore the fact that it says if you mention two clearly identified candidates, you allocate it according to the candidates. We're just going to write that reg out, because I think that is logically inconsistent, and I have lost the thread on how we are interpreting the Act and Commission regulations at this point.
Colleagues, Commissioner Lindenbaum?
I think that this is all, you know, what a court may or may not do is one thing, but, you know, I'm looking at our regulations and our statute, and I'm not a federal judge. I don't plan to be a federal judge, and I don't think it's within our role to be able to make that kind of determination, whether a court may or may not find it constitutional or not. So I'm looking at what I have here.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Dickerson.
I appreciate that very much. I really do. Everyone has heard me say this, but I mean, part of the problem in this area of the law is we've been a judicial receivership since 1976. Like none of the words mean what they mean. And that's hard. It's also what kind of makes this interesting. But I hear what you're saying. I think the disagreement is that I understand you're not pushing for an express advocacy standard. But the reason we have the express advocacy standard is to clearly delineate these things. And we still have the vagueness problems of, for the purposes of influencing elections, whatever else that are in the background. And my own view, and I thought this was your client's view. Maybe I'm mistaken. My own view is that when we're interpreting some of these terms, including in our regulations, which I agree have to be given effect, you know, when the party is paying for a general message that as a matter of fact will rebound to the benefit of the party as a whole, that spending is not for the benefit of that specific candidate, except incidentally. And I think that that is a reasonable way of reading the underlying statute and a reasonable way of reading our regulations that you may not carry the day in this venue. But that's why I wrote the draft the way I did. And I suppose we'll cross that bridge at some future time.
Can I ask a question in return? So the problem I have with the draft as written, or should I say not the problem I have, but the problem I think it presents with respect to the statute is, what is the difference between paying for a regular candidate ad, which they all just discuss issues and feature a candidate, that for as long as FECA has been around, we've understood to be subject to the contribution limits, because again, it's an expenditure. It is to influence that candidate's election by discussing issues and featuring the candidate, and the type of ad that the draft would approve, which again is just a candidate discussing issues. How do you square that with the plain language of 30116 and the fact that the act imposes contribution limits on the amount of money a national party committee can spend to support its candidates? I just fundamentally don't understand that.
Commissioner Lindebaugh.
That's kind of where I am, and what kind of confuses me about some of these arguments here is, well, like taking the example of greedy politicians, right? I think most of the country finds that both Republicans and Democrats are greedy politicians. So I don't think that anybody would put that, I mean, I don't know if you're talking about a Republican or Democrat here, right? And to the extent it's talking about a particular candidate who's getting hits for being greedy, that again is about that candidate, not the entire party that would get that benefit there. But if we were to put the trust in the party to determine what they think would help them, I mean, no offense to your client and some of the other clients, I don't trust the parties to do that and to be able to show that kind of restraint. So they could come up with anything and completely change these ads, right? They could say that, you know, Eddie Vedder and unicorns don't care. Is that gibberish? Yes. But for them, they can say that, oh, okay, this is something that we think is going to help our party and our candidates. That, you know, there are some things, I think that in the context of abortion, in some ways, maybe we can look at that differently. And that's because also the IRS looks at that differently. The IRS looks at calls to action regarding abortion from 501c3s and c4s as being partisan because it is so in that realm. And so that to the extent makes this a little bit easier on that side of it. Yes.
I think there's one other point that's important to make, which is political party committees are not issue organizations, right? Their founding mission is to elect candidates of their party to office. They do not have some separate interest in just promoting an issue. They have an interest in electing candidates. So when you tie an issue to generic candidates of the party, I think there's a very strong base to say the party is benefiting from that because they are promoting generic candidates of the party. If you remove the generic candidates of the party from that equation, they're just promoting the clearly identified candidate, right? The DSCC doesn't have some interest separate and apart from electing Democrats to advance reproductive rights in this country. Party committees exist to elect candidates. So I fundamentally disagree with this notion that you can find a separate and equal benefit to a party by just discussing an issue with no reference to generic candidates of the party, because it just doesn't exist. That's not what political party committees do.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Dickerson.
I appreciate that, and then maybe we should table this, but or at least I can table my part of this. I think that cuts the other way. Like, to the extent that your view of the political parties is they exist solely to elect candidates and they choose issues as a part of how to do that, that is in fact evidence that they see a systemic benefit to the party from pushing those issues. So I hear you, but I think that actually plays the other way. And this is why, you know, maybe I agree, maybe I don't with my colleague. I don't know. It's not really a question of trust. It's a question of, if they decide that you and my daughter are the two swing voters that they desperately need somewhere and they go with, you know, punk musicians and unicorns, then great. Okay, sorry, I'm more of a metal guy. But like, it's, you know, you end up in that position of just, they get to choose that. And I think, to your point, counselor, like if that's the professional judgment of the party as to what's going to move the ball for the party, I don't see what additional advantage is gained by sneaking in and Democrats really like unicorns as part of that analysis.
I guess the question in return then is, what is the point of 109.37? Right? The commission has promulgated an entire set of regulations that govern when a political party can coordinate television ads as its candidate and when it's an in-kind contribution. And if the answer to this question about whether or not just mentioning issues is enough, you take a whiteout pen and delete that entire section of the regulations from the book.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah,
Commissioner. I mean, it's actually traditional to tear out the page, but I hear you on that. but my response is just, you know, I'm not a legislative history guy, and I with all respect, I'm not going to answer what is the point of any of our regulations. That way lies demons.
But regulations are to be given effect, right? And if we approve an opinion that says mentioning issues in an ad means the party committee can pay for the entire ad, it's fundamentally contrary to the plain text of 109.37, which is to be given effect. I'm not going to win this one. I'm doing my best.
Let me ask a question, which is, if regulations are to be given effect, is it your position that like the hybrid ad regulation only applies to phone banks?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
That's why I'm here. That's a good question. But yes, Right. That's exactly why I'm here, right? Because I think all we have is the hybrid phone bank regulation. And when the commission promulgated it, it was expressed that it thought about applying it to other mediums and it didn't do so because different mediums bring different questions to bear, which rational determination. Then you have an advisory opinion that only applies to mail. And then you have a decade of deadlocked enforcement matters. So the answer to your question is yes, and that's exactly why I'm sitting before you today on this lovely morning in October. So we all have ample free time.
Again, just to clarify, is your client's position that the answer to question one should be no?
No, we believe the answer to question one to be yes, but I don't think it is a question that is already answered by commission regulations or authority. We need the advisory opinion to affirmatively answer the question.
So you are advocating for us to give the regulations effect, except insofar as we are supposed to give the hybrid regulation an effect, and you want us to not give that effect and to apply it to television ads?
No. Let me be more clear. I appreciate the question because this is confusing. I believe that you can permissibly read 109.37 to say when the content prong is met, that part of the communication has to be candidate advocacy. But to the extent that there are parts of a communication where the content prong is not met and genuinely have a separate and distinct benefit to the party, you can read 30116 to say, okay, the party can pay for that and it's not a contribution to the candidate. But I don't understand how you read the regulation to just say anytime, right? Like there are any, like it doesn't matter if there's any benefit to the party. Like,
understood. Thanks. Colleagues, any other questions for policy, for requesters council? Went to discussion. Vice Chair.
Just a comment that I've always thought that when you've got a named candidate or a visual image of a candidate, and that's the only candidate who is anywhere in the ad, and then there's some tagline that says something about the great Democratic team or the great Republican team or the great independent team, whoever it is, there's really, I think, minimal benefit to the team, to any other candidate except the one who's named. And, you know, we have regulations that were the result of compromises, and obviously we're bound by them, but I don't know any other way that a candidate can advocate for themselves other than by talking about positions on issues. So the fact that issues are going to come up in candidate ads, I think doesn't take them out of the context of candidate ads. I do want to, I mean, at some point we're going to try and resolve this. And I'm not sure whether, I'm not convinced that the draft that was put forward as a potential consensus draft is actually
the consensus draft. And one of the reasons that I say that is the answers to, and I'm going to look to council to verify this, because I really appreciated your very clear discussion of what each draft does. I wish I had your statement in front of me because I thought it was great. But as I read them, the answers to questions 3 and 4 in drafts A and B and revised B are all pretty much the same. The revision in draft B was to make it clear that to the extent that there's an ad that has candidate advocacy and no party advocacy, that means the candidate has to pay for it. But, you know, and I think that was a good clarification, but if that for some reason, if my colleagues don't want to vote for that, but there are votes for the answers to 3 and 4 in draft A, I could support that because it's basically the same answer as revised draft B, which was the one that I would ideally support. So I'm not, if there is anybody who's still on draft A on those two answers, I think we might have 4 votes for the answers to those questions. So which is why I think that, you know, maybe we, and it's a 20-day AO, obviously people were working really fast and, you know, circulating new drafts all the time, but I think maybe there is consensus on 3 and 4.
I don't think there is.
You don't think so? No, nobody on your side still on 3 and 4 on Thursday?
I'm looking around. I'm not seeing anything.
No? All right. Well, then, I thought somebody should put a draft A. Sorry.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
With some trepidation and not to cut anyone off, because I would be deeply hypocritical if I did that, I'm prepared to make a motion.
Okay. Go ahead.
I expect it to fail. That helps my colleague.
Whatever order, if you expect it to fail, then I think that's generally pretty safe.
Well, you know, the first shall be last.
Anyway.
All right. In draft advisor opinion 2024-14, the DSCC and Rosen for Nevada, I move approval of agenda document number 24-43-C, which is draft C.
Thank you, Commissioner Dickerson. Colleagues, is there any debate on that motion? Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no.
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 All right, that motion fails by a vote of 3-3. Myself, Commissioner Dickerson, Commissioner Traynor in favor, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Broussard, and Commissioner Lindenbaum opposed. Further motions? Commissioner or Vice Chair.
Thank you. All right, I have to find the right document number. In draft advisory opinion 2024-14, DSCC and Rosen for Nevada, I move approval of agenda document number 24-43-B1, revised draft B.
Thank you very much to the vice chair. Colleagues, any debate on the vice chair's motion to revise B? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say no. No.
No.
And no, I think that motion fails by a vote of 3-3. The vice chair, Commissioner Broussard, Commissioner Lindenbaum in favor, myself, Commissioner Dickerson, and Commissioner Traynor opposed.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Dickerson.
Thank you. I move a document in this matter. I move a document of agenda document number 24-43-D, which is draft D.
Thank you. Vice chair.
If comments are in order.
Any debate on that motion, please?
Yes. So I would like to propose a couple of small amendments. I'm not sure I have the blue version of this, so I'm not sure I'm going to have the right page numbers.
Well, I've got it in front of me, so I can.
Two thoughts. Footnote, I believe 26, goes to the lack of clarity that I raised as a question. We now know that there is not extra text other than the disclaimer. So I would propose that we delete footnote 26.
Yep.
As unnecessary.
Understood.
And the
Other change that I would propose is, sorry, I have too many documents in front of me. In question two, in the first paragraph after the question of question two, it refers to, it includes the phrase, wherein she is clearly identified as a candidate for federal office. And I believe the phrase in the, well, no, I know the phrase in the statute and regulations is clearly identified candidate, not clearly identified as a candidate. So I would, I have a suggested edit, although I'm open to others. And my suggested edit is that we amend that to read, yes, the portions of the advertisement, actually the entire advertisement, that feature Senator Rosen, comma, a clearly identified federal candidate, comma, narrating or speaking directly to the camera, should be allocated as candidate advocacy. And like I said, it's
on page 11.
page 11 or 12, depending on.
It's, I'm looking at the version on page 11, line 18 to 19, which currently reads, yes, the portions of the advertisement that feature Senator Rosen narrating or speaking directly to the camera, wherein she is clearly identified as a candidate for federal office, should be allocated as candidacy advocacy. And so what the vice chair is proposing is to change that phrase that breaks across 18 and 19. That sort of a positive phrase, I think is the official term, just to say wherein she is.
My proposal was to take that phrase out altogether and to move the phrase clearly identified candidate up in the sentence. And I apologize, circulated this morning, right. Otherwise I would have done this in writing to everybody. Yes, the portions of the advertisement that feature Senator Rosen, comma, a clearly identified federal candidate, comma, narrating or speaking directly to the camera,
should be allocated
as candidate advocacy. And like I said, I'm not worded to that particular formulation. I'm just trying to change it to take the ads out, frankly.
So if I could just quickly summarize the vice chairs, and they're on the same page, fortunately, so of the blue draft. On page 11, the vice chair is proposing to modify the sentence on lines 17 to 19, as just discussed, and delete footnote 26.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Dickerson.
I'm happy to accept both edits as friendly amendments.
Okay. So the current motion on the table then is to approve draft D, subject to the edits discussed at the table. Yeah.
They have my copy, Commissioner.
And Mr. Stepanovic. Sure. Okay. So again, the pending motion is approval of draft D, subject to the edits discussed at the table. So just summarized. Is there any debate on the motion as amended? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right, that motion carries unanimously. Any opposed? No. Abstaining. Okay, I apologize. So that vote carries by a vote of 5-0. Myself, the vice chair, Commissioner Lindenbaum, Commissioner Dickerson, Commissioner Traynor in favor, and Commissioner Broussard abstaining. Thank you very much to the Policy Division and to Requesters Council. With that, Madam Acting Staff Director, are there any management or administrative matters to discuss today?
There are no such matters.
Thank you so much. We're going to stand adjourned.